Now, welcoming Bruce Williamson from Rail Futures and Martin Summers to the studio. Good week, bad week, gentlemen.
Well, you mentioned, you've alluded to Marvin's plan for a metro system around here. Around Bristol.
Yes. Exciting times because they're now talking about not only sticking the tram on the Bristol and Bath cycle path, mm-hmm. which was previously a railway track, which is why it makes such a good cycle path. And even in December, Sostrans have released statistics saying 3,800 people are using it every day
right.
to bicycle and walk places, which creates no green emissions.
True, but then neither does... trains. No, they don't. You know, green powered trains, Network Rail gets all its electricity from green sources. Electric trains don't pollute at all. And of course, the advantage of trains, and this is, I suppose, the key point, rail based vehicles, whether it's trains or trams, no other form of transport can attract people out of their cars. So if you want to reduce cars, if you want to reduce pollution, the only way to get modal shift, as we call it in the trade, is to provide an alternative that travels by train or by rail.
Interesting. Martin Summers, how long have you been hearing this trope and nothing being done about it?
Well, I mean, we've been hearing it for a long time. I mean, I remember John Prescott talking about a joined-up transport policy back in the New Labour days, and nothing was done, nothing happened. And and Bristol has a reputation of being sort of green thinking, but it's still got some of the worst traffic in the country, despite everybody being so green. So it's easy to be cynical, isn't it?
I'm afraid so, because, you know, we had a Lib Dem councillor, formerly of Cabot, now of Hotwells and Harbourside. Mark Wright was in the studio with us last week, and he said when the coalition government was elected in 2010, the green light had already been given to the 200 million quid for Metrobus. And 2 years into that government, they said, you can actually change that money to a tram now if you want. And that was before any ground had been broken on Metrobus. So, Bruce Williamson, why didn't the council and the associated authorities go for a tram at that point?
God only knows. It is idiocy of the highest order. And, you know, what we're seeing is this Metrobus, which will be a white elephant. And it's, you know, the costs keep escalating, keep spiralling. And because of sort of saving face, it will work, it will run, and it will run for a few years until they realise the error of their ways, and after a while say, oh yes, no, now we've considered the facts, you know, experience, the situation's changed, now we think a tram is the way forward. Tram is the only way forward, or rail-based transport is the only way forward. We've seen, you know, these guided buses, these busways, they just don't work. They don't work in the sense that they don't attract passengers, they don't achieve that modal shift. And even by the councils or the promoters of this scheme's own figures, it's going to make an absolutely negligible impact on traffic in the city. So that's the most optimistic forecast, is going to make no difference at all. The most pessimistic forecast is going to cost billions of pounds and make no difference at all, possibly even make things worse.
Well, what's the consensus within the transport pressure groups in the southwest and, you know, more local to Bristol? Because, frankly, the city has been in chaos for the last 6 years with digging holes and making space for a transport link network to bring the neats from South Bristol up to the highly paid aerospace jobs at Filton.
Yeah, I think it's more of a political issue than a transport issue, in the sense that, you know, the deal has been done, they've got to save face, they've got to sort of stick with it, they've got to go through with it now. You know, they couldn't risk the political embarrassment of abandoning it now, even though common sense would actually say it's still a very, very bad idea. So Marvin comes up with this idea, and, you know, he's got a lot of mockery for it, but he does have some, you know, some sense behind it. He wants to link up the airport by rail, which actually is a fairly sound idea in itself.
But for the fact that, you know, the airport is up on the edge of the Mendips, it's at quite high altitude.
Yeah, you do have a problem with the gradient. Railways aren't brilliant at going up steep hills, but it can be done, particularly trams. Trams actually can go up quite steep hills. And you could do something where you had an underground station at the airport, and that alleviated the thing. But, you know, either way, it's doable. it would cost quite a lot of money. And crucially, where I think Marvin has seen the error of his ways of late is building it underground. Is the whole railway underground is monstrously expensive, and that really, you know, I think is what makes life difficult. You know, where possible, that rail lines need to go overground because it's much more feasible and much more economical to do that. Hence why, even though I think the because it's been controversial of late, even though the City Council and the West of England Authority or whoever's behind it won't say we want to use the Bristol and Bath Railway path, I think they do. It's pretty obvious they do, because that's the only realistic option.
Okay. So there are two proposals on the table at the moment that are blowing your skirt up, and you're not entirely pleased about either of them. Please,
no, I'm not. Okay.
Let's have some of the detail.
Well, let's talk about what we were just talking about now, the Bristol and Bath Railway path, which is just on our doorstep here at the Euston Community Centre. And one of Marvin's proposals for a railway line is along the route of the Bristol and Bath Railway path. And Sustrans have sort of started to object to this, you know, and you'd think an organisation called Sustrans, Sustainable Transport, would support, you know, a sustainable transport proposal, because rail is one of the most sustainable and environmentally friendly forms of transport that there is. And their argument is that you know, the railway path can't sustain a track and a cycle path, when actually clearly it can, because the evidence is that at Bitton, further down the line, they've done it. You have the steam railway and the cyclists happily sharing the path. And the original railway line was double track throughout its length. And so it's the same width here, just in, you know, in Bristol as it was out there. There may be one or two examples of incursions where, you know, but they can be dealt with. And you know, cyclists are more flexible than trains. You know, you can divert a cycle path for a short period of its you know duration with no trouble, which is much harder to do with mm-hmm. with the railway, you know. And there's a solution out there which would leave everyone happy, but Sustrans, you know, they don't seem to see that. And there's evidence of this as well. We've seen it in the Borders railway. They managed to put the railway back in and keep the cycle track in there. Similarly, the Cambridge busway, which we weren't happy about for other reasons, but nonetheless, that's a railway line with a busway and a cycle track as well. So it's doable. The alternative, of course,
well, the example that everyone's going to use is the trams in Edinburgh, which went monstrously over budget to cover what was already a very good bus network from the airport into the city centre. And there have been a number of cyclist fatalities on the tram line since it's opened.
Well, it's not surprising that people, you know, like to pick up on the unsuccessful example of a tram. I mean, I think, you know, Edinburgh Tram is successful, even though it was, you know, over budget and has been controversial and has been scaled back as well. But we have numerous other examples of trams that have been brought in. And the two really good examples are, well, there's three, is Manchester and Nottingham and Croydon. All of, despite the recent tragedy, nonetheless, tram remains a very, very safe form of transport. These schemes have been very, very successful. And here's the crucial point. Only rail-based transport can attract people out of cars. So, you know, if you want decent quality public transport that's actually going to make a difference, it has to be rail-based. So, you know, the guys, I saw this open letter from Chris, what's his name, from Sustrans. He says, we wholeheartedly support the idea of a metro line between Bristol and Bath. And then he goes on to say why he doesn't support it. Well, if you wholeheartedly support it, there's only one realistic option, which is on the Bristol and Bath cycle path. Underground is hideously expensive. And if you were going to build a tunnel underground, well, it would be cheaper to put the cyclists in the tunnel and let the trains go over the top. But somehow I reckon they wouldn't go for
it. Well, you know, probably less availability of vitamin D for the cyclists down in the tunnel, which isn't
same
going
applies
to
the tram passengers.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I hate to bring this up.
Yeah.
There is an extant railway line from the centre of Bristol to the centre of Bath,
yes,
which is vastly oversubscribed.
Well, there you go.
The infrastructure is there. Why are we not putting more carriages on that? Why are we not putting more trains on that?
Because we've pretty much reached capacity on that. And also that rail line you just mentioned doesn't serve Mangotsfield. You know, it's serving different parts of the suburbs of Bristol for a sort of commuter route. So you would pick up different customers, as it were, from different parts of Bristol, mm-hmm. and bring them to Bristol. I mean, between Edinburgh and Glasgow, for instance, there are three lines, all very busy. So the idea that there's one line and that's all you need, it doesn't quite make sense.
Okay, so let's do a little bit of blue sky hypothesizing now in the studio. There alleged to be building a new motorway junction up at Emerson's Green for the technology park. An awful lot of new housing going in there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make logic, as it's a it's a greenfield site, but it's still in the process of construction, wouldn't it be an idea to run something tramish, railish, sustainable-ish from there now?
It would be an excellent idea, Billy. Okay. But of course, the obvious route is the continuation of this Bristol to Bath railway path, which went up to Mangusfields, crosses the M4 and joins it just this side of Yate. So, you know, there is actually a very strong case for reinstating that whole railway in long term. I think Network Rail want to do it. Mm-hmm. And it would serve that area that you described of northeast Bristol, you know, and provide an alternative to all this road building. Because, you know, the problem with road building, of course, is it just induces more traffic. It you know, solving congestion by building new roads, it's chasing rainbows. And it's amazing that the politicians still haven't seen that. You know, after it fails time and time and time again, and Einstein said the idea of idiocy is to do the same thing again and again and again, expect different results, you know. And yet politicians build roads, they become congested. The penny hasn't dropped yet. It doesn't work.
Okay, so let's continue the rail argument then. There was a lot of talk during Charlotte Leslie's tenure as Bristol North West MP of reopening the Henbury Loop, which would service the 7,000 new homes being built on Filton Airfield.
Yeah.
There is an extant railway line that runs parallel to this.
Yeah.
Which apparently isn't going to be made available for Transport Solutions getting the potential 20,000 new adult users and up to 40,000 under 18 users in or out of the city.
Yes, it's madness. It's very, very frustrating for a transport campaigner like me that you know, that these things, it just takes forever, and it's so half-hearted, and so many obstacles are placed in the way. But you're absolutely right. There is this freight line, the so-called Henbury Loop. In order to run passenger trains on it, you have to upgrade the signalling for safety reasons, and you have to build some stations. And you wouldn't believe how expensive it is just to build a platform. It's monstrous.
Well,
you know?
If it's anything like the $270 million it's cost to build a metro bus that nobody's going to use, then I can believe it.
It would be a bargain capacity, but I think it does cost something ridiculous, like $10 million to open a station, God knows why. But yeah, so what's happening is that we're not getting the Henbury Loop, we're getting the Henbury Spur, which is, so if you can imagine going out on the Seven Beach line to Avonmouth, well, not quite to Avonmouth, and then turning north and going round towards Filton and then coming back into Bristol Temple Meads, that's the Henbury Loop. And we're not going to get the loop. We're going to get the spur. So trains will go out to Henbury and then come back again through Filton. And one day, hopefully, when the penny drops and the investment is available, then they'll bridge the gap, and you get this circular route, which makes so much more sense for improving connectivity and making the whole rail thing more viable. But it is bizarre that we're talking about, you know, we can't get the money for the Henbury Loop. We can't get the money to finish the Portishead job off. And yet, you know, Marvin's talking about, you know, three underground lines. So God knows where he's going to get the money from. And then also the madness of building roads. This is the other thing we were talking about earlier as well, which we haven't really talked about. It's the Brislington Greenway, or as it might also be otherwise known, the Callington Road Link. So
hold your buttons on that. We're not getting onto that yet. I want to make sure that we finish in some detail.
Okay.
Why the Henbury Loop and the Portishead line, which the lines are there.
Yeah,
we've been
talking
about this for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the estimate, apparently, for the Portishead line went recently from £60 million to get it up and running, with one extra station, I think, at Pill,
that's right,
to now £180 million because the trains can't go fast enough for humans.
Yeah, it's not quite that. I mean, yes,
Do we need a guy with a red flag out in front
not
again?
Not quite, but it is, again, it's a signalling and safety thing. So the safety standards for freight trains aren't as high as the safety standards for passenger trains, and we want want to run the passenger trains a little bit faster than we run the freight trains at the moment. And that means that they've discovered that there are some monstrous earthworks. I think there's some cliffs that need sort of tidying up or something so rocks don't fall on the railway or something mad like that. It's going to cost millions. So as an interim measure, there will be, I think, an hourly service to Portishead, which will run at 30 miles an hour, which is not, you know, it doesn't sound very fast, but actually it's still a lot faster than taking a car during rush hour on the A369. And, it will prove the viability of the proposal overall, and then hopefully that people will see the light and other investment will become available. We found, in Rail Future that when it comes to, getting schemes off the ground, a sort of incremental approach seems to be more successful than a big bang. So we can't have it all at once, but little steps, little baby steps. So we haven't got the Henbury Loop, we've got the Henbury Spur, but maybe we'll get the Henbury Loop available. We haven't got the full Portishead service, but maybe we'll get something up and running and so on. And then in the future, we can build on that and hopefully improve the service.
Okay, because Taylor Wimpey have, sold all the houses that they haven't quite finished, and they certainly haven't finished to a very high standard out on Filton Airfield.
Taylor Wimpey might have views on that.
I don't know, well, have views, but, I would use the example of Sadly Broke from the early 1990s and reflect that straight back at them. Mm. Also, they have issued a number of profit warnings in the last 3 years, so they were very, very lucky not to go the way Carillion went. Yeah. If you want my personal opinion, which is not the opinion of BCFM management, I would like to say. And if, Taylor Wimpey, you would like to take me to court to disprove my hypothesis, then by all means, I would entertain very much seeing you in the dock.
But there is another point about railway in relation to housing. Of course, if you have a reopened line or a reopened station, that increases the value of your property. And Martin, you may want to come on to about land value tax and so on, because everyone benefits from the railway, even if you're not a passenger using it. If you live nearby, then it has a boosting effect on the local economy. So Taylor Wimpey hopefully will be...
Well, my point is they've built the homes now.
Yeah.
When can we expect a station that's going to service these homes?
I don't have an answer to that. That's the thing,
Well, the line is there.
Yes, I know. But as I said, we're going to get the Henbury Spur is happening, and the Henbury station will happen. When is the full loop service? I don't know.
Okay, but presumably the spur is going to go, to Henbury.
Yes, yes.
Which is kind of running alongside where all the new houses are going.
Yeah, yeah.
On the airfield.
Yeah. I think, I can't give you an exact date, but I think it's in the pipeline, and it will be within our lifetimes, I hope.
Bless. Okay, no, I'm playing this especially for all the cyclists that are going to be starting. Here with Martin Summers and myself in the studio, and we're talking, trying to solve some of the transport problems that Bristol is facing at the moment. There doesn't appear to be any money, and now there is some talk of putting an extra road in South Bristol.
Well, you say
South East Bristol.
You say there isn't any money. One of the frustrating things for me as a train campaigner is that you always struggle to get rail schemes off the ground. Oh, no, there's no budget for it. Can't find the money. And yet when it comes to road schemes, somehow it's money, no object. And these road schemes get forced through often in the face of huge local opposition. And the latest one we're going to have a row about in Bristol is the, I mentioned it in passing a moment ago, what's sometimes called the Brislington Greenway, sometimes known as the Callington Road Scheme. And it's a disused railway line.
Yes, but we should probably explain the geography of where this is to people.
Yeah.
If you go to the Sainsbury's at the Black Castle and you go up the way past the side and the rear of the store and head in a straight line from there to the Tesco at Brislington, that's pretty much what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you're taking the A4 as it is now, it goes sort of underneath or just behind the Lodecker pub and comes out in South Bristol. And I suppose it is part of the railway line that eventually went out towards Whitchurch and beyond. Now, when Marvin is talking about new transport schemes and, putting trains underground, obviously, I'm sure he does know that it's much, much, much cheaper to put them overground. And so where we have a section of potentially reusable rail line that might be able to be used for a future transport scheme that isn't roads, it makes sense to not build a road on it and force the railway underground at huge expense. And obviously, as I said before, the road building just increases traffic, just increases pollution, it just induces demand, and it will get us nowhere. But for whatever reason, reason. Bristol City Council and the West of England Combined Authority seem intent on ramming this scheme through. There is a petition which the... if you search for Brislington Greenway, you'll find it. Unfortunately, the petition... It's run by the Liberal Democrats, and Liberal Democrats, I hope you're listening, I won't sign it, because when you sign the petition, it signs you up to get spammed by the Liberal Democrats, which
I think is
rather sneaky of them. There's not even an opt-out button, you know.
Oh, so. That's good. And you know, the last time the Liberal Democrats signed a piece of paper, it took all of about 20 minutes of negotiation for them to turn their back on it.
Yeah. So, you know, nonetheless... obviously, I, as a transport campaigner who supports railways, or supports decent transport, in fact, you know, I oppose this. It's a stupid idea. I hope it doesn't get through, but I fear it will.
So what's going to happen with this? Because I had a quick look on an aerial photograph of the area in question.
Yeah.
Some of it's being used. There's a scrapyard entrance along part of the way of it. Yeah. It's a bit of a cutting, and it's a bit not of a cutting. It doesn't really go from anywhere to anywhere.
No, it's not a hugely long piece of I'm guessing it's only probably half a mile, maybe a mile tops,
yeah.
You know. But you know, the options are to build a new road on it, you know, with all its attendant advantages and complete lack of gaining anything. It won't solve congestion. It will just move the congestion somewhere else. It'll probably become congested itself and waste millions of pounds. Or it could be used for a possible future, you know, tram line or something, or make it into a cycle track, or make it into something that, you know, what these campaigners want to do is make it into a greenway, just a green hub in the heart of the city, which would be very nice. There's all sorts of possible uses for it, all of which are better than converting it into a road.
Okay. Aside from Liberal Democrats seizing control of this campaign, how does one, you know, voice their ire
in
opposition?
Well, like I say, if you search for Brislington Greenway, you can talk to your councillors. You can maybe set up an independent campaign, or join one of the other many transport groups and environmental groups in Bristol that will be no doubt opposed to it, as well as the Lib Dems. You know.
Because Lib Dem group leader Gary Hopkins, I think, is one of the councillors for one of the wards that is likely to. Metrobus is due to open this year.
Yes.
Some of it.
Yes.
A bit of it.
Yes.
The uptake, I suspect, will be a lot of people having a go.
Yes. I'll be curious to ride on it myself.
Because it's the new thing.
It's the newfangled thing,
Do we know if it's running poo buses or diesel buses?
There's talk that they want to buy some poo buses, but right now it's diesel buses. It's conventional diesel buses.
Okay, so that's going to have a downward effect on Bristol's air quality again.
Yes, it will. They'll tell you that they're low emissions buses, and obviously, you know, engine technology does improve, and the latest diesel engines are very good in terms of, you know, filtering out all these nasty particles and so on. But I dare say you still smell them. They probably still give out a few PM10s and a few nitrous oxides and stuff, which is the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
PM10s are these microscopically tiny little bits of sooty carbon that are cancerous to breathe in. And petrol engines give them out too, but much less so. And do
poo buses spit them out?
Poo buses probably spit them out in much smaller amounts. I don't know for definite. I mean, poo buses run on gas, which generally burns a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm. Well, should I point out gas that's created recycling facility at Avonmouth?
Yes.
Genico's creating local jobs and mitigating some of the environmental impact of Bristol sewage on the Severn Basin.
Yes, it's very good, and more power to the robot. I would say as well that there are proposals for poo trains as well, because of course you can run a diesel train on gas, but I don't think there are actually any up and running as yet.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something to ponder.
Do
poo trains versus electric trains? Had you your first Great Western time over again with this ridiculous fudge that we've now got partial electrification and partial diesel to get you into the stations, would you have opted for a poo solution given the choice?
I would have opted. You see, the problem is the Chris Grayling, who's the Transport Secretary, is
who's still in his job.
I can't believe this. Yeah. Okay. Electrification is great. We all love electrification, even though people don't like the overhead wires because they're not pretty. But they're, you know, electric trains are more reliable, they're greener, they're cheaper to buy, they're cheaper to run, they're faster, and so on. It's just win-win-win-win-win all around with electrification. And as a fudge, we have these new trains, these I don't know, I think they're actually the very first few are up and running already, these new Hitachi built intercity express trains, and they have electric power as well as diesel power. And Chris Grayling would have you believe that this is all newfangled and wonderful. We don't need electrification. We've got these newfangled bimodes. They run on diesel, they run on electric, everyone's a winner. Not quite so. You know, firstly, you know, hybrids are nothing new. We've had combined petrol, diesel and electric trains running on Britain's rail network for some time in different capacities. The technology isn't really new. But the problem is you have either an electric train with extra weight on it, i.e. the diesel engines and generators, which are not being used when it's running under electric power, or you have a diesel train which is underpowered. It's a fudge. It's neither thing, you know, it's unsatisfactory in both regards. So what would be much better is to have pure electric trains which are lighter and more reliable. And of course, you've got the increasing cost and complexity of having a diesel engine as well as all the electric gear as well. So the way forward is undoubtedly to electrify the whole route, and we want it to go a lot further. We want it to go certainly to Western Supermare, maybe down towards Exeter in the longer term. Network Rail have bitten off more than they can chew in these massive electrification projects around the UK, the Great West and the Midland and so on. And, you know, it's fair enough that the government says, hang on a sec, this is getting a bit out of hand. Let's stop and solve the problem. But what they said is, let's stop and abandon it altogether, which is really a complete cop-out, which is, you know, very unsatisfactory, and we're not happy about it.
Okay, because, you know, to overspend a bit, yeah. We had Councillor Mark Wright in last week, and he said, you know, for any public service contract, generally you expect contingency of about 15%.
Right.
But to overspend by £2 billion and still only deliver one third of the job.
Yeah, it's not good.
No. Quantity surveying of the worst sort.
Yeah. And again, you know, both Network Rail are guilty here and the Department for Transport for not picking up on this sooner, really. They should have looked into it and made moves, you know, when the overspend started, not when the overspend really got out of hand. That really is sort of, what's the phrase, bolting the gate after the horse has bolted.
Yes.
Shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted, yeah.
Okay, so we've got 3 minutes now to talk about solutions.
Okay.
Bruce Williamson, we've highlighted the problems, the issues, the traffic, the air quality, the lack of PUBOS use, all of this stuff. What's the solution?
Well, there isn't.
Well, what's the affordable solution?
Well, there's no. I think we need to recognise that there's no magic bullet. But I think I would reinforce some of the things that I have said earlier, which we ought to recognise. You know, that firstly, that road building doesn't work. Secondly, that if you want to attract people out of their cars, it's got to be rail-based because bus isn't very good at it. I'm not anti-bus by any means. Buses are great. They have a role to play. But if you put on a new rail route, it will attract passengers out of their cars. A new bus route won't do that or won't do it anywhere near as well. So it has to be rail-based, and that's why Metrobus will fail. And also, Marvin is proposing this massive new expansion of rail schemes in the city. You know, it's lovely to have these long-term aspirations, and if you look at it in that context, I'd say, yeah, well done, fair enough. But in the shorter term, we've got to look at what's achievable now. Let's fix what we've got. Let's expand what we've got. Let's get Portishead up and running. Let's get Henbury Loop up and running. Let's maybe get trains on the railway path here, although obviously that's going to be controversial. Let's also preserve those routes which might be available for use in the future and not build on them, because that is spectacularly short-sighted. But the government won't learn, you know. The amount of railway lines that have been lost under supermarkets and housing estates, it's just excruciatingly frustrating to look at the short-term stupidity of those decisions and of the stupidity of selling off these disused railway lines rather than mothballing them. But, you know, let's not make it any worse. And that would cost nothing. It costs nothing to say, no, you can't build on that. Build your supermarket somewhere else. Yet the government won't do it.
Okay.
There's a zero cost option.
You have painted a bleak picture.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing we need to recognise is that public transport is expensive. Transport is expensive generally. The economics are stacked very much in favour of roads and motorists and road building. I mean, motorists will often claim that they're paying more than you know, they get out of it. But there are, again, this is one for Martin, really. It's about the what you call externalities, you know, the cost of treating people who have suffered with respiratory diseases through road pollution isn't passed on to the motorist. Railway, the cost of policing the roads isn't passed on to the motorists, but the railways have to pay for the British Transport Police out of the railway budget. You know, those are the sort of disparities that rail is up against. And if you know, and I speak as a motorist, but I mean, if motorists were forced to pay the full cost of what they cost society, then it would be a lot more expensive.
Okay, you've got 30 seconds. The sainted Tim Kent was the Liberal Democrat controller of traffic policy from 2010 onwards at Bristol City Council. What have you got to say to him?
No comment.
Really? That's very diplomatic of you, Mr. Williamson.
I'll leave you to lay the boot in, but no, I don't have... What's the old saying? If you don't have anything good to say about anything, best to say nothing.
Yeah, you've been talking to my grandmother. Thank you very much, Bruce Williamson. It's time for the news at 7. We're back.